morning. This is the Liberal Oasis radio show, a mere 3 days away until the Bush nightmare is officially done. It goes to show that we can survive almost anything. Better days are ahead, but lots of hard work to do. This is not going to be simple, easy, or quick to dig out of the hole that we're in. And after a hearty day of celebration on Tuesday, the work does not stop. There is no rest for the weary. But before that work begins, I should mention here in Northampton, you can see the swearing in live at the home of Drinking Liberally, Paradise City Tavern. They're going to be open up early, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. with a buffet lunch. I believe there's also going to be an after party at Mama Iguana's at 1 o'clock for those folks watching the swearing in at the Academy of Music. I think tickets are sold out for that already. But Paradise City Tavern will be open to all, and there will be an inaugural bash at the Paradise City Tavern for the regular Drinking Liberally festivities, which always happen Tuesdays at 6:30 p.m. How nicely they coincided with this moment of history. But even before then, the work has begun. Just this week, you've heard me talk about this on several shows because it really is the number one legislative priority right now. The economic recovery package, what Obama calls the American Recovery and Reinvestment Plan, the House Democrats just released their draft of that. They made their package slightly bigger than what Obama was talking about, slightly less business tax cuts than Obama was talking about, arguably still more business tax cuts than are needed. But it is still a pretty healthy dose of public investment, $550 billion worth of public investment across the spectrum. It's not just environment energy. It's not just education. It's not just healthcare. It is not just roads and bridges. It is not just broadband. It is covering the spectrum of all the infrastructure neglect that we have suffered over the past 8 years and then some. At the same time, it is not the final solution to those problems. It is merely a down payment. It is putting us on the path to economic recovery. But there will likely be more needed down the line. Congressman David Obie said this will probably not be the last bill that we do this year on the subject. There's some economic concerns about that. Joseph Stiglitz had said earlier, better to go too big than too small. You can scale it back later. You don't want to miss the mark early. So I don't want to be overly sanguine that we know this is exactly right. It is healthy to put additional pressure on Congress to beef it up because the Senate hasn't put out their bill yet. And once the Senate does their bill, it'll be slightly different than the House bill. They'll have to come together and negotiate a compromise. So continual pressure on them to jack it up. Even Obama himself has said that economists recommend a package as large as $1.3 trillion to really get the job done right. So there's room to grow. I think they expect it to grow. At the same time, it's important to keep pressure on them to pass this quickly because delay is an enemy. My folks at Campaign for America's Future, ourfuture.org, have a letter writing tool you can use to tell your congresspeople, pass this now. It's important to have that level of pressure on. But no, regardless of whether or not this is the absolute flawless bill, it's never going to be a flawless bill. The perfect is never always doable in a democracy. But it is no question, that this is a fundamental righting of the ship. We are turning the ship around right before it goes off the brink. And to turn it practically 180 degrees within a few weeks of a new presidency is stunning, is transformational. It should be seen as such. And a concern that I have going forward is, do we, as foot soldiers in the liberal progressive movement, are we as focused as we can be on these key priorities? It is very easy to get distracted. We talk all the time about how George Bush and Carl Rove would want to distract the public They want to distract you by talking about this or that. They want to do these little political moves that you don't pay attention to the more insidious stuff that they're doing. Well, don't think that you are so superior that you can't get distracted. Was it worth all your time talking about whether Roland Burris was going to be seated as senator or not? Did that have anything to do with the key priorities facing this nation? There are lots of little stories like that. Does it really matter that Ann Coulter is on a book tour spewing out her predictable hate? Is she even relevant to what's going on in Congress right now? I would submit to you that she is not. She is on a last gasp of pathetic tour that is not really affecting what's happening with this recovery package, not affecting what's going to happen with global warming, not affecting what's going to happen with healthcare. So we have to make sure that we are focused on what's important here. And if we understand that what is going to ensure a successful presidency, what is going to ensure that we bury conservatism for a generation, in the same way FDR's New Deal made it impossible for conservatism to breathe for decades, we're on the cusp of achieving such a goal. If we stay focused, if we put the right kinds of pressure on our Democratic institutions so they don't get watered down by the right. When FDR had a hiccup in the middle of the New Deal because, as Paul Krugman said, he pulled back. He thought I had to be fiscally responsible, pull back on spending, try to balance the budget in the short term. It was the wrong time to do that, and he ended up sparking a recession in the midst of his second term. Which he corrected course, and things worked out okay in the end. A writer at ebonyjet.com said the same thing about Jimmy Carter. He had a big stimulus package in the works, but things started to look a little bit better, and so he cut that in half, and therefore it wasn't as effective as it needed to be, and he had economic problems that plagued his entire presidency. We need to guard against things like that. We need to put that exert that positive pressure. There's a propaganda documentary called IOUSA that was getting free airtime on CNN this past weekend, which is all about trying to scare you into thinking that we can't invest, that we have to be worried about balancing the budget in the short term, that we have to hack apart Social Security and Medicare if we're going to solve the debt crisis, when it is plagued with factual errors that were well chronicled by CEPR, an economic organization. Dean Baker, you may know, he is prominent there. If you go to CEPR.net, you can find out all the things that are wrong with that documentary if that has crossed your transom. All those kinds of things we have to guard against. So we need to know what our priorities are. It is public investment. It is solving the climate crisis. It is guaranteeing health care for all. It is making sure education is affordable. It is reforming the global economic framework. So we have trade policies and global investment policies that lift up workers worldwide, that alleviate global poverty and don't just feed the bottom lines of multinational corporations. These are the big things economically. I haven't even gone into the foreign policy front. I haven't gone to the Middle East, Iran, Iraq, Afghanistan. A new group just started up, Get Afghanistan Right, to make sure that that doesn't become a quagmire. These are the bigger priorities. And if we let ourselves get distracted by the outrage of the day that may have nothing to do with actual policy, we are not going to be doing our 100% to make sure that this administration gets off on the right foot, to make sure that we have a progressive legacy left the way, you know, Ronald Reagan left a conservative legacy for all the positive things that are part of Bill Clinton's management. He had good managing skills, but he did not leave a progressive legacy to build upon afterwards because he had to play a lot of defense throughout his administration. That's not the kind of dynamic we want to have. It requires your engagement, my engagement. This does not happen on autopilot. So let us do our best, have a good time on Tuesday, and get right back to work on Wednesday. This is the Liberal Oasis Radio Show. After the break, we're going to be talking to one of the finest environmental thinkers, writers, and bloggers out there, David Roberts from Grist Magazine, grist.org, G-R-I-S-T.org. Help us focus on what really matters on the environmental front going into this new year. This is Bill Scherer on WHMP News, Information, and the Arts, Liberal Oasis Radio Show. Don't forget Tuesday night, Drinking Liberally, inaugural bash, 6:30 p.m., preceded by Knitting Liberally at the Yellow Sofa. Get your knit on before the inaugural party, Yellow Sofa, downtown Northampton at 5 p.m., and the actual swearing-in happening at Paradise City Tavern from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. with a lunch buffet. How delightful. This is the Liberal Oasis Radio Show, back after the break. And we're back on the Liberal Oasis Radio Show, WHMP, News, Information, and the Arts. A mere 3 days away from the end of the Bush nightmare, the dawning of the Obama era, perhaps in no area of policy will the change be more pronounced than in the area of environment and energy. To help us focus on what to expect and what we should be working towards in this first year, probably the greatest environmental writer and blogger in the country right now from Grist Magazine, David Roberts. Thanks so much for being back on the show.
Thanks a lot, Bill.
You are currently in D.C., away from your home of Seattle, to soak up a little slice of history. What are you looking at on the environmental policy agenda in 2009?
Well, that's it's a good question, and a lot of people are hashing that over. It's difficult to predict exactly how things will play out. If I had to guess, though, I'll say that the Obama people are going to start with this stimulus. This stimulus bill spins a lot on green measures. There's going to be some sort of, you know, I think there's going to be more economic recovery stuff to come, and that will involve a lot more spending, hopefully, on, you know, the electrical grid and mass transit and the extension of the tax credits for wind and solar. Then I think probably next up will be an energy bill, which will focus on things like a renewable portfolio, requiring that a certain percentage of U.S. energy come from renewable sources by a certain year.
That was filibustered last year in the Senate, even though it had majority support.
Yes, filibustered a couple of times. That policy has actually been shot down in Congress numerous times, but I think that we easily have the numbers now to get that through.
And how big a change is that? If you set a percentage of renewable energy for electricity, is that a pretty significant step to take?
Well, it depends on what the percentage ends up being and what the timetable ends up being. But yes, I think that will have a profound effect. Not quite. I mean, I think the most, in terms of impact, I think the biggest impact in the short term is going to be a long-term extension of the tax credits for renewable power, and this is slightly wonky, but quite important, is making those tax credits refundable, because right now you only get the tax credit if you make a profit, and of course in this economic downturn, lots of energy companies, renewable energy companies, are not making profits because they're having trouble finding investors. Making those tax credits renewable means they get that money whether or not they're showing a profit, so that's going to be a huge boost to investor confidence in renewable energy. So I think that's going to be a big deal very soon. But I think, yes, an RPS, a renewable portfolio, will also, this is all in the name of economic predictability. It's all in the name of creating a stable investment environment. And so if you have, you know, this target in 2030, and you know you have to double, triple, quadruple renewable energy, that gives investors confidence to start putting money into this stuff. So that I think that will be a big deal, and the energy bill will have a number of measures like that, which are directly focused on boosting the clean energy market and boosting efficiency And this is, you know, this is all the popular stuff, the spending, the investment, the clean energy boosting policies are all the, you know, I think in the name of building momentum and building popularity, all of which will be building up to the bill to put a price on carbon, which is going to be the bigger fight and the more contentious fight.
I mean, that's the big kahuna, is trying to directly solve a climate crisis by limiting the amount of carbon we put in the atmosphere, correct?
Yes, yes. It's putting some sort of price on emitting CO2 and possibly putting some sort of cap on the amount of CO2, a cap that will decline over time. This is the big climate bill.
Do we expect that this year?
Well, wouldn't everybody like to know? I would have said, if you'd asked me last week, I would have said, no, probably not. I think they're probably going to use 2009 to do this energy stuff and build up a head of steam to go in maybe next year to the big climate bill fight. But since then, you hear people in Congress in both houses really chomping at the bit to get to this. I mean, the other day, Henry Waxman, who is, as your listeners probably know, is the newly installed chairman of the House Energy and Commerce Committee.
A big change from John Dingell, who was probably one of the worst Democrats when it comes to environmental issues.
Yes, that's correct. Dingell was a go-slow guy, and Waxman is a go-fast guy. And Waxman is saying now to the press, he's saying to the press, I want a bill this year. As a matter of fact, he said the other day that he's going to have a climate bill ready by April, which is just, absurdly ambitious. I would be, and Republican members of his committee said, be ready for battle. That's a direct quote. So a lot depends on how that process plays out. I'm sure the process of trying to put together a bill will start this year, but what shape that will take and how long it will take is really anybody's guess. It's a very, very dynamic and volatile political environment right now. So any number of things could speed it up or slow it down. So it's really hard to say.
Now, in all of that you just mentioned, we're talking about refundable renewable energy tax credits, renewable portfolio standards. So there is a percentage that's committed to renewable energy going to our electricity, and the big global warming bill. None of that is a gas tax. And I mention that because I find in conversations I have with certain liberals a real obsession with a gas tax as being a silver bullet to solve all of these environmental energy problems. Why don't you think that is on the agenda? Is that for political reasons or for substantive reasons?
Well, part of me thinks that a gas tax has become kind of a totem for people who are trying to express something about the need to get serious, the need to make some sacrifices, the need to really buckle down and stop with this sort of thoughtless, heedless consumer frenzy that's gone on these last however many years. I mean, I think it's kind of a stand-in that helps people express that. Now, I personally don't think on a policy level that it's the best way to achieve those goals. But I do think people, their heart's in the right place when they support the gas tax. And it's not just liberals. I mean, the gas tax thing is really catching on among the sort of DC punditocracy. The New York Times editors came out for it. Tom Friedman has come out for it. Charles Krauthammer,
big neocon.
Yeah, the neocons and Arthur Laffer of the Laffer Curve, a famous conservative economist, showed up in the New York Times talking about a refundable tax. So it is catching on.
Does it get you where you want to go? Does it solve the problem of putting carbon in the atmosphere and ensuring that there's a limit on it so we don't have a climate crisis? Does it successfully get that job done?
Well, in a word, no. I mean, the thing people need to know about climate and energy policy is that there's two big groups, there's two big kind of clusters of places where greenhouse gases come from. One is transportation. And that's you know, personal automobiles, but also trucking and airplanes and that kind of stuff. The other is electricity and heating and cooling. So you need to address both those, and the gas tax just addresses transportation. So even on those basic grounds, it's at best half a solution. And I personally don't even think it's the best solution for the transportation emissions problem. The problem is gas tax is going to be extremely difficult to pull off. You know, for obvious reasons, it's very difficult to raise taxes on people in an environment of economic downturn, particularly a gas tax, which is a regressive tax, hits poor people the hardest. So, but there are ways to solve that. Most people who propose the gas tax these days propose to pay for it by reducing, you know, the payroll tax, which hurts poor people the most, too. So you can solve the social justice aspect of it, but the larger problem in terms of tackling climate change is that the elasticity of demand, what they call demand elasticity, which means people's ability to make other choices in the face of a price signal like that, is low when it comes to transportation, because we've had 50 years of really car-centered development and oil-centered cars. So
if you live in the suburbs, you got to drive into work, you have to drive your car into work no matter what the price is.
Yeah, so lots of people can't choose not to drive, and it's not like there are other fuels out there for them to choose. So it's just very difficult to get away from oil-based personal transportation. So if you really want to affect the transportation sector, I think don't focus on the fuel, focus on the vehicles. That means tax credits for fuel-efficient vehicles. It could mean buying up clunkers, what they call these older cars that are really high emissions, just buy them up and allow people to trade them in for vouchers for new vehicles. I mean, there's lots of...
I believe Schumer and Feinstein just proposed that in the Senate.
Well, I think some of that, I think you'll see some policies like that in the next year, and probably in the energy bill. But to make a long story short, I don't think a gas tax is a particularly good climate policy. You're not going to have a big impact on global warming emissions purely with a gas tax.
It seems like the conservative movement is probably at its ebb in its history. They've always been better at getting its foot soldiers focused on the specific policy goals they want to achieve. And on the left, we get bogged down in which specific policy prescription is the most superior to everything else. How can we get our people focused on the big goals that really matter as we start this new era of progressive politics?
Well, if I knew that, I would probably be a highly paid political consultant.
What would you say? There are three things. You know, these are the real red lines that we want to make sure that when these policies happen, that they don't fall on the wrong side of that line. What are the red lines that people should really be focused on? What's the most important stuff?
Well, here's how I'd put it. I think good climate policy, if you want to tackle global warming, is a three-legged stool. You need three big pieces of climate policy. One is getting a price on carbon, however you choose to do that. Sort of the popular way right now is a cap-and-trade bill. I'm sure people have heard about that by now. Or you could do it with a carbon tax, and there are other, you know, less discussed.
I imagine there's some cap-and-trade proposals are better than others.
Yeah, some are better than others. You know, the devil's in the details there, but some way of pricing carbon is one leg of the stool. The second leg is investment, and that means the government spending really large sums of money on infrastructure, like the electricity grid or public transit, on R&D. You know, the level of energy R&D in this country is pathetic, and it's been pathetic for a long time. So a lot of money being spent. And the third leg is regulation, which is sort of, you know, out of fashion these days. These are called command and control regulations. And, you know, liberals are sort of scared of regulation now because they've been stereotyped as big government, you know, controlling the market, interfering in the market, blah, blah. So these old-fashioned regulations are out of fashion, but, you know, experience shows that they work well and they work faster than price signals. So you're going to need a lot of regulations in terms of, you know, energy efficiency standards for buildings and appliances, and the, you know, the renewable portfolio standard that we talked about earlier. So you need carbon pricing, you need big investment, and you need regulations, a suite of regulations and regulatory reform. It's not just new regulations. It's reforming some old regulations. It's getting rid of some old regulations. It's basically going through the, you know, federal regulatory apparatus with an eye on climate. So those are the three big legs. So I would just encourage everybody not to get too obsessed with any one of those legs at the expense of the others, to make sure that something is happening on all those fronts.
Just very briefly, because we have to wrap up soon, in the economic recovery plan that's just been released by the House, is the spending on clean energy at least a good start, or is it just woefully insufficient from an environmental perspective?
Well, the answer to that is both. It's a good start. It's very heartening. It's not close to what it's eventually going to have to be, but it is a good start. The one place it really falls short is transit. Public transit really got short shrift in this bill. I think it's very disappointing, because you had Obama and Biden and Nancy Sutley, the new head of CEQ. You have a lot of people up there talking about how they support transit, but the funding in this recently introduced stimulus bill doesn't live up to that rhetoric. And of course, you know, there's plenty of time for more funding. And the transportation bill, you know, the transportation bill is coming up for reauthorization in the next couple of years. So
this
that'll
is
be
not
a big
this is not the last bite at the apple.
Yeah. There will be time. So it is a good start, and there's lots of really great stuff. Even if you dig down to the details, there's lots of really good details in this bill. So clearly, people up there are, you know, their heads in the right place. So there's a long way to go, but this is definitely, I think, directionally positive.
Excellent. Thank you so much, David Roberts from Grist Magazine. Check out his blogging at the Grist Mill, gristmill.grist.org. This has been the Liberal Oasis Radio Show on WHMP News, Information, and the Arts. We'll be with you next week, Saturday, 10 a.m., the first show under the rule of President Obama. We'll see you then. Take care.